We're back with the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell and I are talking with Dr. Connie Smalljohn, who thinks about viruses. I have a particular love for the concept of democracy. And part of a democracy is that we make our own rules and then we abide by them, that we have a citizen army that is led by a civilian leadership. The idea of coordinating the military and the civilian is deeply embedded in how we go about doing the business of a democracy. And it seems to me that you are a very important arm of that. How do you go about that coordination?
Well, I think we have wonderful collaborations with the civilian infectious disease people, such as C.J. Peters from the Center for Disease Control. In fact, if people don't know that, C.J. used to be at USAMRIID. He was our division chief for quite a few years before he moved there. We also have very good collaborations with private institutes, the Southwest Foundation in San Antonio, for instance, a lot of universities, National Institutes of Health. And in the scientific community, it's very easy to collaborate. And there doesn't seem to me, or never has seemed to be, a big stigma against military versus civilian organizations. We're all working toward the same goals, and we send each other reagents, and I find it to be a very collegial atmosphere in science. It's like your big extended family.
One of the important things about what you do is getting solutions, i.e. vaccines, to people in a hurry when there is an outbreak, whether you know what it is or not. And this need for speed, it would seem to me, would be an important part of what you do.
Well, it's not particularly important part of my job, but I think in terms of the military, they've got the infrastructure to do it. If some vaccine needed to be somewhere quickly, they've got everything set up, chain of command on down, that they could get it there. And that sort of a structure is absolutely critical when you have speed.
And it's not necessarily available in the civilian population.
No, it isn't. No, unless they've put into effect a plan ahead of time. And I think a lot of the states right now are thinking about that and have developed their own organizations to look at what would we do in New York City if there was a biological warfare problem in the subways or whatever, and are thinking about it now.
I'm interested. You've been doing this for 20 years, more or less. About the trajectory of this, obviously the science has changed dramatically, but just in terms of the kinds of work you've described, how has it changed in that time period?
Well, if you think about it without regard to technology, it hasn't changed a lot, because our mission when I went there was to make vaccines. And the way we made vaccines then was we would grow the virus up, kill it with something, formalin, or we would make a weakened virus that could be a live vaccine, because there wasn't much molecular biology then. So those approaches are still being used a lot, but now we get to blend them with newer methods that make a faster and, it used to take 10, 15 years to even get to the virus that you want to put into a vaccine, whereas now we could theoretically do it in a couple of years, but still getting it through all the regulatory issues is going to take 10, 15 years. But nevertheless, I think the real answer to your question is the type of work hasn't changed and the goals haven't changed.
But the way that you do the work.
The way that we do the work and the tools we use to do the work have changed dramatically.
And you expect the same thing going forward, presumably. Do you see any discontinuities looking forward?
No, I don't see any. There's going to be a blend of the old and the new, and eventually older methods that were cumbersome and dangerous will be eliminated in favor of what's new.
One of the things that has really struck me in listening to a variety of the people who have been at this conference with you is I really had not thought about the public health implications, military or civilian, about the exploding human population. That makes your work with vaccines all the more pressing, doesn't it, that there's so many more of us going places we hadn't been, living closer and closer. Doesn't just the sheer dimensions of the population explosion among humans affect your work?
I'm sure it would. Of course, it's going to be virus and disease dependent. Some things it'll make worse, and some it probably won't make any difference
for.
But yeah, the more people there are, the more chances you have to catch something from somebody next to you.
I'm going to ask a politically incorrect question. I love doing that. I've also been struck, as I have gotten acquainted with some of your colleagues, that how many men there are in your business and how apparently few women. Is this something also that is changing?
I hope it's changing, but you're right. And it's something we think about a lot and make a concerted effort, especially if you're a woman in science, try your hardest to encourage other young women to get into this field, because it's still a very male-dominated organization. And when I'm organizing a meeting, I do everything I can to make sure at least half of the people there are women. And I think it's something that women need to do. I think men should do it too, but I think it's absolutely critical for women to be mentors to other women and to do anything they can to encourage because it takes a certain amount of aggressiveness to be good in science. You have to be willing to play the political games and to get to places that normally women aren't in sciences and in mathematics and things that people don't think of are girl-type things. And you have to start young with your children and tell them, you know, this is fun. This is something you can do. You can go out in the field and trap mosquitoes if you want to. You can go to Africa and take care of patients with Doctors Without Borders, or, you know, you can do that just as easily as a man can.
Well, and aggression is not limited to males in the species.
No, it isn't.
It's a human characteristic.
And it should be encouraged in women.
Well, you mentioned this business of encouraging women in the sciences, don't you see that that has improved since presumably you and I were younger?
I really don't. I don't see that it's improved a lot. I think that I go to meetings still, and I look around the room, and there may be a lot of young women graduate students there, but there's far fewer older women giving the talks and sitting on the committees, being in charge of things. Is that there's a ceiling somewhere where the women aren't getting to the levels of being in charge.
What do women bring differently to science than men? I mean, is there really a gender difference in this? Do you see that? I'm not asking for the answer. I'm asking for an opinion, at least.
It's person-dependent, of course, and there are stereotype crossovers all over the place, but I think women bring a lot more attention to detail to science. I think that just like we know that when you take the dishes out of the dishwasher, your drawer should be right there where you put your silverware in, not across the room like a man would do it. You know, we also
Some
pay
men.
Attention to our labs. Yes, I know there are exceptions to that.
Well, it's an interesting challenge because as we have harder and harder questions to answer, it would seem that we need the full range of the human potential being directed at those answers. And I just have seen fewer women than I would have expected.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you addressed the notion of, I guess, role models. If you look at the statistics, women now, I think, are fairly soon will get more college degrees than men. The difference, I assume, is that those degrees are in something other than science and that you're not filling the pipeline. And as you say, it really has to go back to prior to college. I mean, there has to be that willingness to be aggressive, the willingness to go out and play in the swamps or whatever it is. Do you see any movement in that?
I do. I mean, I'm maybe being too negative about it. There are the take your daughter to work days, and there's a lot of encouragement for young girls in athletics and things that bring them more into the main line. But I really don't think there's enough encouragement for young girls to be in scientific things. There's all the biology, oh, that's gross, we're going to cut up animals. Girls don't like to dissect bugs or insects or trap things. Well, they do. You know, little girls like to do that too. And they just can't be told they don't like to do that.
Part of this, I would think, and it doesn't address specifically what we're talking about, part of it is a general what appears to be lack of understanding of what science is in the population at large. And we still are fighting about evolution. And it would seem that part of the challenge is just a broad understanding of the kinds of work that is done and getting past some of the stereotypes, some of which you've mentioned, but all the stereotypes around science about what it is and what it is not.
Right. And, well, and you from having a daughter of my own, I know that little girls are different. Some like to put dresses on, and some like to wear jeans and play sports. And
so, and you could say exactly the same thing about little boys. Some like to put dresses on, and some like to do sports.
Yeah, there's differences in kids, and you can encourage them to still like to wear those dresses, but like science, too.
Well, and it's, I think part of it, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, there's a stereotypal sense of what a scientist is. And, you know, we've got a, you know, sort of a... you know, a single model of what it should look like, and it's male and something and something and something, and you're a living example. But, you know, the fact is, every scientist is different. They're still human beings, most of them anyway. I have been told that there's some that are not.
Well, we could think about that.
That also applies to lawyers and businessmen and people that do radio and other.
That was, not surprisingly, Bill Russell. He's going to return with me and with Dr. Connie Smalljohn in just a moment for a couple more minutes on the Paula Gordon Show. Please be with us when we return.